Welcome to episode 25 of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in Helsinki. But Luis, if Krampus is going to make a visit to Helsinki this year, do you think Krampus prefers rainy and dark or extreme cold?
Krampus prefers extreme cold.
Okay, so we're safe from Krampus because it is so dark and so rainy. Maybe something more fitting for Cthulhu. Perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it should be a little bit more stormy.
Yes.
Cthulhu. I'm your co-host, Jonas, and with me is your other co-host, Luis.
Hello, everyone.
In this episode, we will again go through our top 10 games from second half of 2025. We did our first half of 2025 6 months ago. Again, we're picking from the games that we played in the past 6 months. Luis, why do we do it this way instead of just having kind of top 10 games of all time or top 50 games of all time?
We do it so that we can tell the audience what we're actually playing, not what we like just for the sake of nostalgia, or like something that is really good but you haven't played in 3 years, then does that really count as being really good, right?
Yeah, and I think also this is a way for us to be a little more accountable to our listeners. We might be hyping a game, but then we have to be open about it if it turns out that we're not actually playing this game anymore after 12 months. And we play a lot of games.
We do.
So there are constantly games coming in, games going out. Some games do stick. I'm not saying those are my absolute favorites. It's just that some games are more suitable for more game time. I don't even know what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Some games are just easier to get on the table.
Yeah, for sure. Some games are more easier to get to the table. Now, will those experiences make it to the top 10?
Who knows?
Who knows? We're about to find out.
Yeah. Before we get to the top 10 list, Luis, what was the worst game you played in the past 6 months?
Honestly, I think I was thinking about it and I was wondering when you're going to ask this question. I think maybe Ants. Ants is like, Ants is the one that I was like, yeah, this is not the worst game, but the most disappointing. I was very excited to play Ants because I never got to try Rats of Whitstar, and then people say that it was on the same universe and it was the same publisher. So I was like, okay, I never got to try Rats. I don't think anybody owns it, but at least I get to try Ants. And it was not a great experience for me. So I think that was the most disappointing.
My worst game was Pawnscape. I was actually thinking between Gloom and Pawnscape. Both of them were new to me games. Gloom is from 2005.
Yeah.
And oh boy, does it show. Not a very fun game to play. But the good thing with Gloom is that you know it's from 2005. You know it's going to be, I don't know how to say it, without swearing, not good.
Yeah.
Whereas Pawnscape, it's from 2025. It's from Tomasz Holek.
Yeah.
Designer of SETI, designer of Galileo Galilei.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that the guy would be able to put out something better than the most average set collection game ever made.
So it was mostly disappointing. Did you think it was an okay game? Or was it really a bad game, do you think?
I think it's a serviceable game. It's not like a bad game. It's just that I cannot simply understand why does this type of a game need to be made. Because there's 100 other games like this. Okay, let's get to the top 10 of second half of 2025. Luis, do you want to start?
I can start. We don't have honorable mentions. So I'll just talk about my number 10. I wanted to make an honorable mention, but I can't.
No, you don't.
Number 10, I have one of the latest games by Sashi and Sashi. It's a game called Shall We Dance? It is number 10 because I have been generally disappointed by the last games that Sashi and Sashi have put out, the card games that have put out, including, what's it called, Boss Stops or something about bosses, and then one about like jailbreaking. Those were kind of average set collection shedding card games. I don't even remember. And this one was actually really good. It felt really interesting.
I'm so excited to hear this because, I kind of also thought that they are out of ideas for simple card games.
Yeah.
And hearing that their latest simple card game made it to your top 10. So what's the big unique selling point?
I don't think it's unique. It's like just, it's fun. Like it's fun again. Like, which is again, like the other ones felt like not that fun or just more complex or more stuff happening without it really being juicy. And in this one, there is, I've only played with two people, so I don't know how it plays with three or four. So I've only played with Mia, but there is that tension between like, okay, how do I want to steal some cards from you? Do I want to play cards in front of me? Do I want to end the game now because I feel like I'm winning? And oh no, I lost because I end the game too early and I could have done better. So I think the game is very simple. You play cards from either a new color or a color that you already have. But I don't want to explain.
Is it a shredder? Is it a ladder?
It's not a shredder.
Or...
So basically you're just...
set collection?
Set collection. Okay. You're doing set collection in pairs. But depending on the cards that you have, if your opponent has the pair of your card, which is very gender specific, so not super queer friendly, but still, like if you play a man of color purple and then your opponent has a lady of color purple, then you can steal that and that counts as points towards the end of the game. But then you're also giving points to your opponent for stealing those cards. But there is like a good decision making because of the rules of the game, you can only sometimes play some cards. So it's like, okay, should I play these? But if I play these, I risk it being stolen from my opponent and then it's going to be harder. How do I make the right decisions? And again, it's super simple. It's nothing extraordinary, but it was a nice surprise of getting a nice sashi game back in a way. So that's why it made it to my number 10.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, we should definitely play it. That is number 10, Shall We Dance by Sashi and Sashi.
My number 10 is Mu. I've now played the new revised edition of Mu 2 times. I keep struggling to do well in this game, but this is one of those trick takers that I can see myself playing for years to come. The basic premise of Mu, which is a trick taker, is that in every round, players get divided into two teams. The team leaders are selected by how much they show cards from their hands during the bidding phase. This results into a very tense start and then just really fun, solid team versus team trick taking with very few twists. I've been playing only the revised rule set. To me, it seems like the easier and more engaging rule set, as you can get plenty of points even if you have a bad hand, because most of the points will come from your team's success. But I'm pretty sure there are people who have much better understanding of the nuances between the different versions of Mu. Luis, you played Mu with me. What did you think?
Remind me which one is Mu. Like, is Mu the one where like you're choosing the teams?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And if
it was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it. I just have only played one, so I couldn't really put it here. I had forgotten that we played, to be honest. So not that the game is forgettable, it's just like we play so many games that... that's why I started recording my games more precisely from now on.
Hey, now that you're recording your games, so how many unique games did you collect for this 6 months?
Not that many, because I started doing it in September, but 78 games in total, but I don't know which one is from these last 6 months.
I have 121 games. And the reason why I want to give out these stats is also, as a listener, you know that the top 10 isn't just, you know, the best 10 out of 20 games that we happen to play. No, this is the cream of the cream.
Yeah.
Creme de la creme.
La creme de la creme.
Yeah. All right. So where were we? With Mu. Yeah, it's great. I also played it for the very first time in the previous half one of 2025. Again, I had a really great first play. I was just a little timid, you know. It's the first time you're playing a trick taker.
Yeah.
It's a bit different. You're not sure if it's just a novelty that it's speaking to you, but now playing it for the second time, I was so sure that yes, this is a game I love. That was Mu.
All right. My number 9 is a game called Lata by designers Rola and Costa. This is the second game in their Quinoa's collection, which is about making fish and canning fish and selling fish to different markets. It is a action point engine builder in a way where you're like just creating cubes and then selling those cubes. Very complex mechanics to explain, but still like really fun and interesting game design from these two designers.
Yeah, I played this with you last year. Was it so?
I think we played it at two players.
Yes.
And
yes.
Lata does not really work at two
players.
Yeah,
but I remember it having some kind of unique twist with the engine building. What was the thing?
It is so that like when you're putting the cards or in order to build your engine, you're putting the cards in a specific order in your production line. And then you can always produce with whatever you have left in your production line. So let's say that to produce a red cube, you need a sardine and a tomato. And even if you only have one tomato card, but it's all to the end of your production line, then you could produce with every single sardine that you have, you could produce tomato like a red cube, which is a canned sardine with tomatoes, even though you only have one tomato. So that's the interesting thing. It's like you can produce with, depending on the position of your cards, you can maximize the efficiency, because normally red cubes and yellow cubes are harder to make. So you, if you position things correctly, you can do quite well and then sell to the markets very, very nicely. So that is Lata. It's a game that I played for the fourth time, I think, in H2 2025. And every time I play it, I think, as long as it's not two players, every time I play it, I think the game gets a bit better and better. And you understand a little bit more the design mechanics. Because I think the first time we played was also kind of a little bit weird to understand, like, the buying, the selling, like, what are the options here for the final scoring?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't recall that part being complex.
It's not complex, but it's just like, doesn't make that much sense. So like at the end of the game, like, oh, okay, now I see why those cards made more sense to buy, or what, where the strategy would be. So that is maybe what I meant in the complexity, because it's not your traditional game design where everything is put in the table.
Exactly. Your first time playing it, you're playing it like a normal efficiency game, other games that you've used to, and then you realize like, oh, I was supposed to do this thing instead of that thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
So yeah, that was my number 9, Lata.
My number 9 is Ra. I had Ra in my previous top 10. Mm-hmm. Last time I showed it to some of my colleagues. This time I showed it to some of my university friends, who I would say are hard to please when it comes to board games. But even they had a great time with Ra and were able to appreciate the mastery of Dr. Rainer Knizia. I don't think I have anything more to say about this game. I played it plenty this year, and it's also in our fantasy collection.
Mm-hmm.
Great game. I also feel that there's more and more people who are getting tired of the general Ra praise. It used to be cool to like Ra, now it's in print, and now everyone is liking it.
Exactly.
It's like, ugh, could Ra fans be any more basic?
Yeah.
But then I never really hear any further dissection of what's so boring or basic in Ra. So yeah, if liking Ra is basic, then I am a basic boy.
You are a basic boy.
I like Ra.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I absolutely hear you. Like before, it used to be like, oh, this Ra is like just like this gem, hidden gem that nobody can get. And now that it came out in 25th Century Games?
Yes.
With this fancy edition, like this, like, and it's like everybody's like, oh yeah, do you like Ra? Everybody likes Ra. So, but I mean, obviously everybody likes Ra because it's a great game. Everybody should like Ra. What is wrong about liking Ra? I am also a basic boy.
That was my number 9, Ra.
My number 8 is a game that might surprise you. I've only played it once, and I still think it's a great game. I wish I could buy this game. Number 8 is Carnival of Sins. This is a fantastic party game that we just tried out in Essen in different places. Jonas played with somebody else, and still, you have 7 cards, right? No, or 8 cards, and then you're playing cards every round face down, and everybody reveals at the same time. There's some dice in the middle that you are trying to collect in order to collect points. It's just a lot of chaos, but also a lot of fun. And I wish, as I said, I could buy this game in order to take it to Mexico and play it over there. But right now, it's still a game is not very available anywhere.
To me, Carnival of Sins feels like it's in the same category as Coup or Masquerade. Both of those games, I don't really enjoy playing at all. However, I liked Carnival of Sins, which, you know, I think this is like high praise. Coming from a person who does not like this category of games, I had fun playing it.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think it's fun. And I don't know exactly what happened. I don't, like, there was very little copies, I think, because they ran out by Friday. They already, like, they were sold out of everything they had. So I don't know what it is. I think it was a Chilean company also. So I don't know how big of a company they are, so I don't know how much.
At least Spanish speaking.
Yes. So I don't know what the availability is going to be for this, or if they like got a deal over there and then it's going to be published by some other company here in Europe.
I hope the gold foil is not the bottleneck in the production, because I don't think it needs the gold.
I think it needs the oil to shine. But yeah, anyway, so this is fantastic game. Designer, by the way, Alex Nogues. So Carnival of Sins.
Yeah, and I mentioned the gold foil because the cards, all of them have is like
black and white and gold.
And yeah, that beautiful gold.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic production. Really fun game. I hope it makes it to the availability soon.
My number 8 is Kalimala. Louis asked me if I'm going to do a Kalimala review, because I've now talked about it already in two different episodes. This is now the third episode where I'm bringing up Kalimala, as it is my number 8 of the top 10 games I played in the second half of 2025. So probably no Kalimala review coming up in later episodes, because I don't want to talk about Kalimala in every single episode. I know Louis questions whether this game is for him, as Kalimala doesn't tell the players, here is what you need to do, Louis, and this is the optimal way to do X, Louis. But instead, you need to stay on your toes. You want to hit popular action spots and you want to be ready for the scoring rounds. But what is a popular action spot? And when should you be ready for a scoring round? And how ready should you be? Who knows? Kalimala is a fun game to figure out, as the economy and the scoring rounds feel extremely player-driven. Louis, do you disagree?
I think maybe it was a bad teach.
Yeah. That was my number 8, Kalimala.
All right, my number 7 is a game that I had already on my last top 10, and it is a game called Splendor Duel, which Jonas hates, but I really enjoy, designed by Marc André and Bruno Catala. The dual version of Splendor, I think, is one of those dual games that do deserve to exist, unlike maybe more dual games like King of Tokyo. I know that you disagree. I know that
about King of Tokyo. King of Tokyo Duel, I do not disagree. That game should not exist.
Yeah. So yeah, I really enjoy it. It's really easy to play. It's really easy to bring to the table with Mia. It's really easy also to carry to the different places and play anywhere and set it up, play it, boom. A lot of fun. Splendor Duel. I've talked about it already before, so I don't want to talk more, but that's my number 7.
Speaking of 25th century games and reprints of Rainer Knizia games, my number 7 game is Tigris and Euphrates, which is coming out from 25th century games. I don't know when. Hopefully next year. I played the game finally in person this year, and after that some more on BGA, just to kind of try to wrap my mind around the dynamics of the game. Mm. We discussed Tigris and Euphrates in our first Ropecon episode. Louis, you said Tigris and Euphrates feels too tight. And when I edited that episode, I was just blaming myself for not challenging you on that point. Tigris and Euphrates is an area control game where people are in each other's faces the whole time, as you do in a game that's all about interaction. So what on earth did you mean by Tigris and Euphrates being too tight, Louis? Do you not like it when other players are mean to you and come and kick down your kingdom?
Yeah, I guess I didn't like it that much. It felt that I had not much agency in that game that we play, where everything I did really depend on, maybe I guess it's a little bit stupid to say, but everything I did, the other players quickly undid it, which is like, it feels like I have no control over these actions. I'm trying to move here and then Ellen comes here and steals it. And then I'm trying to move there and then Simone is like, so in that sense, it like felt, that particular game felt, I think, a bit frustrating. And I think that was the point that I was trying to make in that episode. And I still remember the frustration that I had in that particular game. So that is what maybe felt tight and unfairly tight at some point. But I don't remember. Is that what I meant?
I don't know. You tell me, what did you mean by it?
No, it was like, now I don't remember.
You remember saying that the three-player game might be better.
Yeah, exactly. I think...
But that one, I don't understand. Why would a three-player area control game be better? Because you have more room?
Because you have more room.
But why is that better? Because usually it's the other way around. People want to play games, area control games that give players less room.
Yeah, maybe. But I think the point here is that like with three people, can be less frustrated. Like your actions can be undone less easily. Like, which I think was that's the thing. Like by the time my turn came around in that game was like, okay, now I'm part... Or it felt that I was partially out of the game. Now, I do remember that at the end, the scores were not that dissimilar. Like we all have very similar scores. And in that sense, it was like, okay, maybe I didn't do as bad as I thought I was. But I remember through the game, I was not having a lot of fun. I was being more frustrated than having fun. Yeah. So
one thing I learned from those BGA games is that defenses are super important.
Okay.
So sometimes when you have that good kingdom that is generating points for you, it's 100% certain that someone will try to take that from you.
Yeah.
And you kind of can sometimes tell what color are they going to come in with.
Yeah.
And therefore, you need to start collecting tiles for that event because that is going to happen. Mm. And they think they can take that from you with 3 green tiles. And then you show them 5 green tiles. Okay. And tell them like, oh, you got played.
Okay. Well, how can you collect even 5 tiles? Aren't you supposed to play 2 tiles and then refresh?
No, you have a 5-tile hand, don't you?
You have 6 tiles on your hand, I think.
Well, I don't remember how many hands you have, but it's more than 2.
At least no, but you have to play 2 every turn, right? Or you have to take 2 actions, which means that you potentially could get rid of 1 tile and then you don't get the green tile.
Well, yeah, maybe it's a little bit of luck of can you get to the 5, but you can always, you know, keep those green tiles, for example, there waiting for that defense play that it's going to happen.
But definitely, I would like to play this game again. I own it. So it's definitely a game that I would like to revisit to see how it feels. But yeah, I didn't have a lot of fun that one time. So it's not in my list.
That was my number 7, Tigris and Euphrates.
My number 6 is similar in age, but different designer. This is El Grande, the granddaddy of area control games.
So when have you been playing El Grande?
I played in Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is...
I'll accept that excuse.
Yeah, this is the reason why it made it to the list. Had I not played in Mexico, I would not have played it, I think, on this second half. And the reason I played it is like I played with my cousins, which generally don't... like they like board games, but they like more like fast-paced games. And El Grande was a little bit of a... we had to cut it at six rounds, you know, like that it recommends. Like the first time you play, just play to 6 rounds. We were playing in this board game cafe, and I think people were like tired enough that we needed to leave. But still, the game itself, everybody loved it, even though I was a little bit skeptical at the beginning whether my cousin's girlfriend, who does not like that many games at all, would have enjoyed it. And she anyway beat everybody, and she ended up liking quite a lot. So.
Oh, that's the perfect play.
Yeah.
When you have that one player who doesn't like board games, let them win.
Yeah, that's true.
And you will turn them around.
Yeah. And she likes card games and stuff, but like board games are a little bit meatier. Maybe she like she's put off by them, but then El Grande delivered, as El Grande always does. And therefore, it's my number 6.
My number 6 is Junk Art Revolution. If you own only one dexterity game, it probably should be Junk Art. The new version of Junk Art called Junk Art Revolution seems great. I say seems because I have only played it once and I haven't analyzed all the changes they have made to the original edition, but the basic stuff is the same. You always play 3 mini games with different rules for each game, and the player who got the most points from those 3 games wins. All of the games are about stacking pieces on top of each other. Mm-hmm. The pieces seem to be the same as in Junk Art. The minigame rules have been changed slightly. The changes I saw seem to be for the better. Basically, some rounds will let players to really push their skills to try to collect more points, which I think is great, especially if there is a player who is in the lead and you need to try to play catch up. In the original Junk Card, it was sometimes very disheartening to see that, okay, we still have to play one more game, but we already know that person is going to win. Especially, do you know why? Why would you know? This is also another great change I think they made. You would have, for points calculations in Junk Art, in the original version, these plastic chits, kind of like the chits that you have in Llama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, black and white, which are really easy to count how much someone has points. And then you can see that, oh, wait, I can never win this game. We have no chance.
Yeah.
This game is already over. Now it's cardboard tokens without any different colors.
And you flip them down?
Well, you don't have to flip them down. It's just like, as long as you don't try to count them.
Okay.
You won't accidentally count them, which happens with, you know, black and white chips.
Okay. You know, I have never played this game still to this date.
I will bring it to the Weekend Gamers. I should bring it to the meetup as well, just to show it to you.
Yeah.
It's like such a solid game.
Definitely willing to play this game. I'm super excited about all the good things you have talked about. So.
And again, the really great thing about this game is that, you know, it was out of print. Junk Art has been out of print for years. And I think that's one reason why it's not necessarily as known, you know, but people who are kind of playing a lot of dexterity games, all of them know about Junk Art is not the most known game in general. But I think with this new edition, that is for sure going to change. That was my number 6, Junk Art Revolution.
My number 5, I'm going with the old now, it's Bonanza. old card game about planting beans and then, how do you say, like,
I guess harvest.
Harvest.
Yeah.
And harvesting beans in order to transform them into money. Very easy. One of the first games that did this mechanism where, like, you cannot move the cards around in your hand. You have to play them as they are. And that limits which you can plant and then therefore forces you into negotiating, forces you into trying to give away the beans in your hand that are worthless. I've played these a lot this year with my family in Mexico. I gave them a copy one of the last times I was there, and they cannot stop playing this game. So every
can't get enough of beans.
They can't get enough of the good old beans. The only frustration is that I thought the game was up to 7 because the version that I have here goes up to 7 with some expansions, and all of the versions that I could find in Mexico were up to 5.
Yeah,
so we're always 6, and it's just like,
yeah.
So honestly, never played it with 6 or 7. So I never used my version before. You always have to take away some beans, I think, from that version. But now I'm thinking that I might take it home or might take it back to Mexico to try it out with more people or see if I can get the expanded version. But definitely fun card game, really easy, still holds up. Bonanza.
Yeah, I also played Bonanza this half of the year. It just didn't make the list, but it's a tough competition. But I think if I had played it with family,
yeah,
for sure it would be in the top 10.
Yeah.
Because I think those are the best settings to play Bonanza. Well, not it doesn't have to be family. I think it requires to be played with people who you know very personally. And you have to kind of get into the mood.
Yeah.
If alcohol is involved, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, not necessarily. No, that's for sure. That was my number 5. What's your number 5, Jonas?
My number 5 is Exit the Game. Luis, I need to be honest to our listeners. We are, in fact, recording this episode already in December and not in January. I say this because me and Chilla are in the middle of the latest Exit Advent calendar, which is usually my favorite version of Exit games. Yeah. Me and Chilla played also some other Exit games in the past 6 months as well. From the normal Exit games, the Catacombs of Horror was my favorite. If you haven't played it yet, save it for Halloween. But unless this Advent calendar will end up being a dud, it will be my pick for this number 5. And I'll add a quick comment about the calendar in post somewhere around here. We did finish Exit the Game Advent calendar, the Intergalactic Race. This was our 3rd calendar. We will for sure do a calendar next year as well, but the Intergalactic Race was a bit of a letdown. I don't know if we are getting too good at solving the puzzles or just played Exit way too much, but I wasn't surprised with any of the puzzles the same way I had been surprised in previous years. Since there's also always a year between the Advent calendars we play, it's not like I have a super fresh memory of how were the previous calendars exactly, which means I might be too unfair to the Intergalactic Race. And in the end, I really liked it. And Luis, you need to get better at Tigris and Euphrates.
Great comment, Jonas.
That is the magic of post.
By the way,
you never know what happens there.
So you are planning to put a comment there after you have finished the whole thing?
Yes.
But even without finishing the whole thing, you are having a lot of fun, which you could still put it as your number 5. Or no?
We have only opened 2 of the boxes. I know we are so behind. We've been so busy. We haven't had time to do our Exit calendar. So if it would have been 10 boxes, then I could have easily said that, oh yeah, it's solid, but it's only 2. There's always the risk, you know, that it turns out that, hey, what on earth was this calendar?
So for our listeners, what to expect, like when you open a box, like box 1, how long would it take you to do that?
The easy ones are maybe 5 minutes.
Okay.
Or 5 to 10 minutes. Sometimes there's like a really hard one.
Okay. But every box is like no longer than an hour.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
And even the hour ones are puzzles where you just are hitting your head to the wall. I think those are the moments where people usually go for the solutions instead of trying to spend an hour or even 2 hours trying to figure it out.
All right.
Yeah, but it's perfectly doable on weekday evenings
Got it.
And even play a game after that if you want. It's just that we've been a bit too busy this month.
Got it.
That was my number 5. Exit, the advent calendar. Let me check the official name.
I think you put exit games at the beginning of the list or at the beginning of your number 5. You said exit the game instead of exit the advent calendar.
Yes.
So you just encompass, you cheated.
No, now I'm going to undo my cheat because I will say my number 5 is exit the game, the advent calendar, the intergalactic race.
Ooh,
unless it ends up
cool.
not being the one.
Intergalactic race. My number 4 is the Dark Water. I think we talked a little bit about the Dark Water 1 or 2 episodes ago. We haven't finished playing this game, so maybe I'm in the same situation as the advent calendar, where like we are in the middle of chapter 2 out of 3 chapters from the main campaign. But still, the game you can play in several different sessions. You don't have to really finish the game in order to have fun. And I think this is a very fun game.
Is this a replayable game?
I think it's replayable in the same sense as Chronicles of Crime is replayable, that you can, they will create more campaigns, more missions later in the app.
No, sorry, I meant like, are you destroying any components?
No, you're not destroying nothing. No, it's just with cards.
Yeah, because, hey, you know what? This is on the record, so don't feel pressure. Don't feel pressure here.
Yeah.
How about, because we're playing Winnie the Pooh, the Serious Detective.
Mm-hmm.
How about when we're done with those 3 cases, we do a switcheroo? And I'll give you your Dark Quarter back.
Okay.
Because I want to try this game.
Yeah, sure. Did you ever play Destinies? Is it called Destiny? No, Destinies.
No.
I think it's similar in that sense. So it's really hard to explain. You have a board and you have a setting that in and of itself you could replay, but then the story is kind of ruined. So in that sense, like, I don't think it's replayable because the story is ruined, but I think what Lucky Dog has always done is that they open source their components. So people create new cases for Chronicles of Crime that you can download, or new adventures for Destinies. And I think they might do the same with the Dark Quarter. But I am now realizing that I could have read more about to make sure that this is true or not. But for sure, the Dark Quarter, I have another a campaign expansion. So for sure, I would like my Dark Quarter back so I can play the expansion campaign. But that is my number 4. Really enjoyable game. I think it's worth trying.
My number 4 is The Bottle Imp. Bottle Imp was my favorite trick taker in the last top 10 list, and it continues to be my favorite trick taker in this list as well.
Mm-hmm.
Louis, I think I am ready to say this. The Bottle Imp is my favorite trick taker. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Now we have spoiled your future top 10 trick taking games of all time.
I can always change my mind. I didn't say of all time.
You anti-buried the lead.
Yes.
All right. No, that's great to hear. And why haven't I played this more then?
I don't think we have had 3-player game sessions, Luis.
But this is not... 3-player is the best way to play it, but it's not only a 3-player game, right?
It's not only, but I don't want to venture out from the 3-player
zone. Have you ever tried it?
No. I have not. The reason why I don't want to venture out, because I really like the card passing stuff that happens in the Bottle Imp. I think in the previous list, I said that it almost feels like the game is in 2 acts. First is the card passing, and then is the card play. And if you would add a 4th player, it would ruin that card passing so much, because the beauty in the 3-player card passing game is that you know at least 2 cards that both of your neighbors have. And you want, you keep only 1 card. Sorry. No, I can't remember. It doesn't matter. You just have a lot more information about what cards your opponents have.
Got it.
And you would put 1 card in the middle as well, so you know what card you're throwing out. And the game shines when you are able to count cards effectively.
Mm.
So that means you are then able to do calculative risks. So you can then do more gambles. And the more players you would add, the less you can count, which means these gambles are just more like, well, you know, who cares? Maybe this, I will not get the Bottle Imp with this one card. Maybe I don't. But here you can kind of get into the minds of the players.
Yeah, got it. Well, yeah, that sounds fantastic. I would like to play it again. Then I think I haven't. The only time I played was that one of the first times you played it. So,
yep.
For sure, I would like to play it with more excited Jonas.
That was my number 4, the Bottle Imp.
My number 3, another duel game, The Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-Earth. this is on the list. I played quite a lot. Like, I think it's one of the games that I played the most this half of the year. I play with different people. I have the chance to play only with two people. And I'm like, okay, what should we play? Maybe Duel. And I give the option, and most people always choose the Duel for Middle-earth. Fantastic game. We've talked about it, or at least we talked about Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah, have you switched your stance? You used to say Seven Wonders Duel is the better game.
I don't think I have switched my stance.
Yeah.
I still think the Seven Wonders Duel is a bit better, but I think it's easier to bring to the table this one because it's a newer version, fancier version, flashier version.
Yeah, Seven Wonders Duel is it's like, hey, Rome.
Yeah.
Look at this. Have you ever seen this in a board game? But Lord of the Rings, I mean, a lot of people like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. See, the only thing I don't love about Lord of the Rings is the Lord of the Rings version is the end game scoring. If nobody gets to the last or to one of the three victory conditions before the game ends, then it's whoever has the most presence in the map, I think.
I thought you were going to say the one thing you don't like about Lord of the Rings is the golem, because he tries to steal your ring. You can't trust that guy.
I thought you didn't like the IP.
I don't.
Okay.
But golem I like.
Golem you like, okay, because he tries to steal the ring. All right. That is the Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-earth, my number three.
My number three is Race for the Galaxy. Mm. We talked about Race for the Galaxy in the previous episode. I tried to convince Louis to give Race for the Galaxy another try. I played Race for the Galaxy in the second half of 2025, and it was great. I'm also playing a Race for the Galaxy tournament on PGA at the moment.
Mm.
Oh, don't think it's like any fancy tournament.
No.
It's just
one of those tournaments.
Just
that
one of those tournaments.
You have to have 100 ELO to participate.
Yes.
Yes.
Or in this one, I'm not even sure it's like that. It is from a Discord server, this tournament, and the Discord is not even all about Race for the Galaxy.
Got it.
It's just a friendly person organizing a tournament.
Got it.
For Race for the Galaxy enthusiasts and curious.
Is it one against one always?
It's always one against one, which is my preferred way of playing Race for the Galaxy.
Okay.
And yeah, since I'm in this tournament, yeah, I'm again really feeling again the race vibes. So yeah, Race for the Galaxy, number three.
Now I'm even more interested trying out. My number two is Earthbound Rangers. This is, I think, another one of the games that I played a lot lately. I played with Mia.
You have played it a lot. Because every time I ask Louis, like, hey, what have you been playing lately? It's been, well, we're playing that Earthbound Rangers.
But the thing, like, because the way we play, you're supposed to play game session supposedly is one day, right? And one day is either you lose kind of the game session or you win the game session and pack it away. But we most of the time never stop there. Like, it's not like the day ends and then we stop playing. It's either we stop before the day ends, like either Mia is too tired or we have some other stuff to do. And they're like, let's leave it on the table and continue playing tomorrow. Or we finish the day and then we're not ready to put it away. And then we continue a little bit into the next day. So in that sense, I think we've played somewhere between 8 and 10 times, but only 6 days have passed. And the training session is pre-day one, I think. So it's like, technically speaking, I think we played 7 games of Earthbound Rangers, but we played it more times, just more sittings to the table. So in that sense, that's like, and every time we sit to the table, I count it as one play, even though it's not really a full game or however it's designed. I really like this game. I think the praise is warranted, all the praise that it has been given by at least two people, or two channels, Shut Up and Sit Down and No Pun Included. However, Mia keeps saying that the game is broken. Mia keeps saying that, like, this is not good game design.
What's her problem?
I think sometimes it feels like there's not much to do with the given options, right? The game is based in tests. You have to do tests like many of the other card games. And the tests are done with some energy that you have, 4 different types of energy, which you have a preset amount, 3, 2, 2, or 1 of 4 different kinds. And the test matches energy, but also matches an approach, which are symbols on a card. So sometimes you either don't have the energy or don't have the cards to do it. And there's nothing in the game that allows you to kind of cycle or do something else. So you're like a little bit stuck. It's like, okay, it feels like a waste of a turn or a couple of turns. And then like, because cards are very important in the sense that like that's kind of your timer for the day ending. It's like if you run out of cards, you have to end the day. Sometimes it's a little bit frustrating that like, okay, we are yet again kind of passing or finishing our turn and we did nothing because there was nothing to do. It's a bit of a problem on like trying to do interesting things and combining game mechanisms or preparing for a game mechanism that would be really cool. But when the cards don't play together well, then it feels like, well, what was the point of that? Like, where is the mechanism that allows me to get out of this bad situation? Or like, so the more we played, I think the more I tend to agree with her. Like, there is some weirdness. Like, I think they try to do too much with the game. I still think in general they succeed. Like, it's interesting and fun. But there is a couple of situations where like, yeah, like that felt like three or four wasted turns. And I'm like, okay, let's just move on or go somewhere else or do something if we can. Or it's just like, no, we're blocked by this stupid card that we can do nothing about because we don't have the right tools. Could it be that we build our decks badly? Maybe. But still, it feels like it's just random. Like it's not really all the time, but every now and then it's just like, okay, I wish there was one or two mechanisms that allowed us to do something extra. Like there's four basic tests that you could always do. And it feels that it should have been five. Like one extra one, like, oh, it allows you to, I don't know, discard two cards for a extra energy or for a random symbol or whatever. I don't know. So it's weird to explain if you haven't played it, but still, good game. I think Mia is enjoying it more and more, but she still says, jokingly, but also frustratingly sometimes, like, this game is broken. So yeah, that's my number two, Earthborn Rangers.
My number two game is Maria. Me and Louis played Friedrich at Robocon this year, and after that game, I decided to bite the bullet and get Maria, even though I knew it can be a hard game to get to the table. Maria is kind of like a three-player sequel to Friedrich. Mm-hmm. You have some extra mechanics, which mainly revolve around these politics cards that players can bid for between the rounds. Well, I was able to get Maria to the table, and the game was so good. I've now played Maria online for 20 times. Mm-hmm. With Friedrich, I was hesitant to say which is better, online or in-person play. But in-person play of Maria is absolutely amazing, as you get to have a little more negotiation around the politics cards. Not a lot, but just enough. Mm. Our game of Maria took something between 3 to 3.5 hours, which I think is perfectly fine for what I get out of the game. Because, guess what? I get a ton out of the game. I love thinking about the different strategies you could try to pull off in Maria and just the general balance of the three-player game. You really don't want any one player to completely bite the dust too early, because that will mean they cannot counter the third player's attacks. Mm. So there's this balance that you try to maintain throughout the game. What a beautiful game and what a great time. Are you excited to play Maria with me after Friedrich?
Sure. I just don't like... I feel I always end up disappointing people that I'm playing with if I'm playing online, especially like, so, but yeah, I'll play.
I'm not suggesting an online play.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm suggesting an in-person game.
Yeah, I would be happy to play Maria or Bottle Imp if we're three.
Oh yeah. Hey, that's a great three-player game day. First Maria and then the Bottle Imp.
And then Tigers and Euphrates.
That's going to be too long. And it's going to break the theme of the cards. Because in Maria, you have your classic deck of cards. Yeah, in Bottle Imp, you don't have a classic deck of cards, but it's based on a classic trick taker. So you have this classicness.
Yeah.
throughout the game, and everything is like designed for three players.
Okay.
That was my number two, Maria.
My number one is a game that I first played with you, Jonas. And then I continue to play, but only on Board Game Arena. This is Tag Team. This is, I've realized I have a lot of duelers here, a lot of duel games. Not a lot, two, three. This is a game where you are trying to beat your opponent. You have two fighters, and you're trying to KO one of the fighters of the opponent. Each fighter has a deck of cards that is very specific to them and very specific to their abilities. And the game is a bit of an auto-battler in the sense that, like, you start with one card of each one of your fighters, and then every round you take three cards, choose one, and put it inside the deck or inside the cards without altering the relative order of the cards. So then each card will be revealed one at a time, and whatever the effects are will apply simultaneously to each other. So because of this, you can more or less try to counteract what your opponent is doing. Like, so if you remember, like, oh, they attack me with the first card, then maybe you try to put a defense on the first card. But
Exactly. I know you're going to put the defense on the first card.
Exactly.
Therefore, I will put a just kind of like gain some energy on the first card and then I'll attack you.
Exactly. And those things are a lot of fun. Like when you see that or when it pays off, you're like, yes, I blocked it. And when it doesn't pay off, you're like, oh, damn it. He was smarter than me. And in any way, it's like, it's a lot of fun. I think one of the people is thinking themselves super smart for taking the, for having made the right choice. But then the next turn, the complete opposite will happen. So definitely a super fun game. It's a game that I would like to own. I think a game that I would prefer to have physically because Toy Factor.
Yes, I also played it on Board Game Arena. And that was after you mentioned that it's a bit difficult to track what's happening on Board Game Arena.
Yeah.
I played it there as well. And I played it kind of like not async, in real time.
Yeah.
Which is usually it's easier to track stuff in real time. Even then, I was just kind of like confused. Like, wait, what is happening?
Yeah.
And I had already played it in person. And even then, I was just like, wait, it's too fast.
Yeah.
Like, be more slow about what's getting applied where.
100%. And even then, I think it's a fantastic game. I think I played with Fabian, my friend. We played multiple times. And then it's still like, once you start getting familiar with the fighters, then it's easier to track.
Yes.
The problem is like choosing a new fighter or your opponent choosing a new fighter that you have never interacted with. You're like, you have no clue what the cards are. It's really hard to see also in Board Game Arena.
The
UI is really weird.
Yeah, and this is not just us being old and not being able to read the small stuff on the screen.
No. But still, a lot of fun. Better physically. I just haven't bitten the bullet yet and bought it, but I will at some point and maybe bring it. We could maybe play before recording or after recording because this game goes so fast that it doesn't even hurt to.
Yeah, I saw online one person saying that, hey, they tried to play it on Board Game Arena and they don't get the thing. Like, why is this so popular?
Mm.
Again, yeah, Board Game Arena, it's not going to give you the exact experience. You need to experience it in person and then you are able to also maybe appreciate the Board Game Arena implementation more because you're like, well, at least I get to play tag team.
Exactly. That's my number one, tag team.
My number one is Sidereal Confluence. Sidereal Confluence was my number three game in the last top 10. Now it's my number one. We have talked so much about the game in the podcast, so I will keep it short. I showed Sidereal Confluence to my colleagues. We played a five-player game, and it was as fun as it can be. Again, I was in the bottom, but that did not affect my enjoyment of the game at all, as is always the case with Sidereal Confluence. I wish Louis, you wouldn't hate Sidereal Confluence, so I could also get to play it more with you. But Louis needs a game with no lag factor, and a game where the best player is the player who did the math the best. And this game has too much going on for Louis, for everyone. So Louis has to do this suboptimal place. Is this correct?
No, I don't mind the lag factor. I don't think this game has that much.
It doesn't have a lag factor.
No. I think the frustration about this game is, or my frustration with this game is that it's really hard to follow what's happening. And then like, you're just negotiating with the persons that you have kind of next to you. And then that takes away from actually, I think, the intent of the game, which is like negotiate with everybody, do the best you can in order to do the best deals. So yeah. If you cannot really negotiate with everyone, because why?
Why
because then it just like would take forever.
No, it's timed. You have 10 minutes.
Exactly. But exactly you time it, right? Like the game rules don't say to time
it. The rules suggest to use a timer for 10 minutes.
Okay.
This is not something I invented.
All right. So there is some suggestion of the time. Yeah, still, I think it's not enough. It's like so little time to actually do good negotiations. And maybe it's also about just getting to know the game more. But yeah, like I don't feel motivated enough to get to learn the game a bit more.
It is complete information overload. I cannot argue against it.
Yeah.
But now I have gone past the information overload. I know what is happening, which means I get to enjoy the game a lot. And as now I can pick those factions that are a little more... I don't know what's the right word here. I'm going to say interactive with other players, meaning that you really need to negotiate with many people in order to do well with this faction. You can't just do your own little thing and negotiate with your neighbors, right? And those ones are kind of like, then they're great because they force you to go around the table.
And this is where, like, maybe that's a problem. I think a lot of people, or at least the times that we played, I was trying to do deals that were beneficial for other people because that was my faction deed. It's like, hey, deal up, you will make it up. If you are able to get the resources now, you can promise to pay them back in the future. But then people will be like, no, I need this yellow cube now. I'm like, but you need the yellow cube to transform into a green. I'm already offering you a green in the future. So like, why don't you want to give me the yellow cube? And like people, I think, have not really, because they also don't understand the mechanics. Then they're like, nope, I'm just going to go into the simple game of figuring out what resources I want instead of on the thinking game, which is like, I'm going to expand my vision into like, what is the outcome that I want? And in that sense, it's just like, okay, well, it's hard.
That is true. That is perfect. Like, that is so true. You're playing with the players who are playing it for the first time. They cannot see all the options and the kind of, they can't see your great deal.
Mm.
That's all about the future benefit and not just now running your single converter.
Exactly. And people are too focused on like, no, I need to run my converters.
Yes.
I need to run my converters. I'm like, you don't. You want resources. I'm offering the resources. Don't run your converter.
Yeah. And even then, even though this is the case, the last two games I played with the Space Whales, which I can never remember the name of the faction, but those are the bankers. And it's all about doing that exact negotiation with all of the players. So I keep facing that same problem. And yet for me, for some reason, it's so fun because I get to sit down with people and say like, hey, yes, I understand. You really want to run this converter, but what do you want to achieve in the game? Where do the points come from? They come from the research teams. Now, how are you going to get there? Oh, you don't have a plan. Okay, let's look at the options here.
Yeah, so you're convincing newbies to give you their stuff.
No,
you do not know what you're doing. I'm going to help you do better in the game by you giving me all your points.
Well, I still come on bottom.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
But then you got fun of the negotiation.
Yes, exactly. So that was my number one, Sidereal Confluence. Now, these were our top 10 for the second half of 2025. There were games that did not make it to our list from the last top 10. So let's look at those.
So the games that did not make it to my list, it's pretty much all of the games from my previous list. Well, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, we just haven't gotten together to play it again with my group of friends.
So no place.
No place. Yep. John Company 2nd Edition, also I think we have not played it since.
Yes, I think there was a moment where we wanted to play it, we couldn't get it from the library, but now Simone owns a very fancy copy.
Yes, that I bought for him. Well,
that is true. Yeah,
I didn't gift it, I just found it.
You should have, you know, this is podcast, you could have said.
Oh yeah, that's true. Edit that out.
Yes.
Zubaris, I also just haven't played it again. Food Chain Magnate.
I said in the last episode or in the last top 10, I said it's popular in the group. Well, we got zero plays on the second half.
But I think Mercedes doesn't want to play anymore.
Yes. So, and she has some very good points about like why it's not a great game. Lots to do with kind of, hey, this seems like a game that's really fun to play on the computer.
Yeah.
Not very, you know, maybe suitable in a board game format. I don't think I can disagree heavily on that point.
Biblios, I don't own the game. This is a library game. We just,
No. Before we get to the next one.
Okay.
So, so which one was the better game, For Sale or Biblios?
For Sale, for sure.
Okay, so why is For Sale not in the top 10?
I haven't played it.
You have not played it?
For Sale?
Yes.
You mean in this list or in the previous list?
In this list. You reviewed it.
Yeah, but like I just...
And you were talking about how you played it in Mexico.
I played it in Mexico...
Last year? Is that what you said?
H1.
So where was it not on the list on the H1? Why did Biblios make it to the list in H1?
Because it was top of my head. That's how I work.
But so you're saying now that we should have it... If you would go back in the past, you have the time machine.
Yeah.
And you would run into the studio.
Yes.
And you would stop yourself. It's like, no, do not say Biblios.
No, I would say, do not say you play For Sale.
What? Okay,
so then I can still talk about Biblios and be happy about having played Biblios without having to justify whether Biblios or For Sale is the better game. Hmm. Micro Macro Crime City, again, haven't played it. Well, now, again, my problem, I think one of the big problems is that I didn't record things, so Now I'm like, did I play For Sale this last time I was in Mexico? Who knows? Anyway, Micro Macro Crime City, have not played it. The Quest for El Dorado, haven't played it. Scroll, haven't played it. Regicide, didn't play it. H1. And Splendor Duel, made
that's
it to
the
list.
Yeah. So for me, games that didn't make it. Newsfjord Big Box. In the last top 10, I said that me and Chilla will likely continue to play Uwe Rosenberg games for the rest of the year as well. But guess what? We didn't play any of his farming games. We've been playing his Christmas edition of Patchwork, but that's it. So then All Bridges Burning, Red Revolt and White Guard in Finland is another game that didn't make it to the list. In the last top 10, I hope that we would have dove into another coin game by the end of the year, but it just did not end up happening. Coin games are big investments in terms of learning the rules, finding the time, and that time was just not available in this half of the year. Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective, The Thames Murders and Other Cases. Me and Chilla played a couple of Sherlock Holmes cases, but none of them really stood out. And we also played the Queen's Park case from one of the later editions, which is this three-part case. That Queen's Park case was such a disappointment. So I was left with a bit of a bad taste of the game series, hence not in the top 10. Still, you know, good cases, but just good. Seven Empires. I did not get to play Seven Empires. I took it with me to the meetup a couple of times, but no luck. Brass Lancashire. I also didn't play any Brass Lancashire during this half of the year. I did play Brass Birmingham, but Birmingham is not quite on the same level as Lancashire for me. And again, it's a tough competition to get to the top 10. Then finally, Guilty Monaco 1955. I was really hoping to see Guilty Fontainebleau. Am I pronouncing this right? Which I learned this year that you speak French.
Me? But very little.
Moi?
Fontainebleau.
Well, you speak so well French that you were able to navigate us at the Paris airport when we were going to Essen.
Ah, that is true.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping to see Guilty Fontainebleau 1543 at Essen this year, but unfortunately, it didn't make it there. There are currently no new Guilty games for me and Chilla to play, and therefore no Guilty in this top 10. But the series is still our favorite deduction game series. Nothing has beat Guilty yet.
So one of the big things that now you ask me, like, why Biblios was not there, or why Biblios was there and For Sale was not there, is like, I'm also considering this list as somewhat of experiences of H1 or H2. I'm not only reviewing the game objectively of like, hey, these are the top 10 games that I did, but like, these are the top 10 board games and experience that I had in the last year. So in that sense, maybe I'm doing the list wrong. What do you think?
I don't know if you can do the list wrong. My personal objective with the list is that, hey, this list will give you, the listener, kind of some kind of benchmark of my taste that you can compare to your taste. So when I say a specific game is good, you know whether I think or do not think the same way about games. How much our tastes will align. Because that is such a big thing for me when I try to find suggestions for games. As said in the previous episode, board game reviews are not subjective, which I said wrong in that episode. So
I was like, wait, what?
Yes, they are subjective. They are not objective. And therefore, it's so much about who is reviewing it. Mm-hmm. I also do think that we cannot completely remove the experience of playing the game from these games and how do we feel about them.
Yeah.
With all of these games, I know that, well, it might be something to do with who I played it with.
Yeah.
Well, not with all. Because, for example, Sidereal Confluence, I can say now with confidence, nothing to do with who I'm playing it with, unless it's just people who hate trading, negotiation, of course, then it's not going to be a good fit. Maria, when you play these games online, you kind of can tell whether you will also enjoy it without the in-person play.
Yeah.
Race for the Galaxy is the same. The Bottle Imp, I could see that to be the same thing as well. Exit. Will I enjoy it without playing, you know, without Chilla? If I would play it solo, I don't know.
Yeah.
Junkyard, again, the feeling is so much party-ish. Mm-hmm. So again, you want to have the right experience. Tigris and Euphrates, played it online, also enjoyed it there. Kalimala, yes, I played it with many different people. Ra, I have now played also with plenty of different people. Mu, now that's a game I would not necessarily want to play with people who have no idea what's happening in the game.
Yeah, for sure. So, but yeah, these are still games I would recommend. So that doesn't take away from that. So still, I guess maybe mixing a bit more of my experience rather than the objectivity of the game still makes sense, I guess.
But do you think there is a game that you would say that, well, this one, it's more about just me and my experience?
Yeah, maybe the Dark Water, for example, is more about me and the experience and the thing that the game gives you, and playing with Mia, who likes this type of games, rather than the game being like super revolutionary. Like, again, if you have played Destinies, if you have played Chronicles of Crime, when they pitch you the idea, when you see what this game is about, you can imagine it perfectly. And like, it's not the best mechanically solid game. It's still fun and good, but it's still about the experience more than the game is great, you know?
Yeah, but the experience, I thought it was more to do with who are you playing it with, not so much about the experience that you have when playing it. Because I can tell you, yes, if the question is about whether I'm reviewing these games from the point of view of mechanics, whether these are great mechanics or unique mechanics or innovation, I don't care about that stuff at all. I don't care about innovative mechanics. I only care about, well, what does it end up feeling like? What are the decisions that I have to make? What else? Those are kind of stuff.
I guess, and then I'm not really saying anything here. But it's like, if I was just listing the games as good games, would I put the Dark Quarter as 4? Maybe not. Maybe El Grande is objectively a better game than...
Now, I guess this goes back to also the stuff that we had discussed before. It's like that test thing.
Yeah.
Is it that? Like, yeah. Okay. Do we pass the test?
Yeah.
We have El Grande at 4. Do we pass the test as board game reviewers?
Yes.
We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Bye-bye, okay?